You may be seated. Justice Prosser has advised the court that he will not be participating in this case. We now call our second case today, 13AP691 and 13AP776, Wilson Mutual Insurance Company versus Robert Falk. Mr. Grant, you have 25 minutes representing Wilson Mutual Insurance Company. Mr. Hetzel representing the Jantes. Hetzel has 15 minutes. Mr. Raggetts representing the Falks have 15 minutes. Mr. Graff, you have 5 in rebuttal. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court. My name is Ryan Groff from the Nash Law Firm in Manitowoc, and I represent Wilson Mutual Insurance Company. Wilson Mutual Insurance Company is asking this Court to reverse the Court of Appeals decision and hold that manure spread by the Falks that contaminated the groundwater around the Falks farm is unambiguously a pollutant. Wilson Mutual is also asking this Court to affirm the trial court's decision that the limited pollution endorsement coverage does not apply to this case. The Court of Appeals held that manure in the hands of a farmer is never a pollutant because manure is, they said, quote, liquid gold. I think that takes what would otherwise be an objective standard of reasonableness. You take a look at what the policy says, and it makes it a subjective standard based on the insured's valuation of the substance the insurance company is contending is a pollutant. That would effectively eliminate the absolute pollution exclusion. I used oil and gas a lot in my briefs as example, but I think they're appropriate. Oil companies look at oil as liquid gold. Gas companies look at gas as liquid gold. But if that same oil and gas gets into the water or gets into the ground, it's a pollutant. The absolute pollution exclusion doesn't depend on how the insured values the substance. The court is to look at 3 separate issues which was addressed in the last case, and that's number 1, does the substance meet the definition of pollutant? Here, Wilson Mutual contends that manure is unambiguously an irritant, a contaminant, and waste, all within the definition of pollutant. Number 2, the court is to look at where is the substance. In this case, the substance, which is manure, is in the water where it's not supposed to be. There's no question in this case that manure is not supposed to be in the water. The third issue is, what is the substance's effect on the environment? Here, the substance manure contaminated the water, making it unusable, causing financial injury to the Falks' neighbors, and causing bodily injury to a minor. The facts in this case are relatively straightforward, undisputed. The Falks are farmers in West Bend. They use manure as fertilizer on their fields. They own approximately 600 cows and they farm on about 1,600 acres. On May 23, 2011, the Falks received a letter from the DNR indicating that manure spread by the Falks had contaminated a local aquifer and some of their neighbors' wells. In that May 23, 2011 letter, which is part of the record, the DNR says that the Falks' neighbors were exposed to a potentially lethal pollutant. The DNR called the event a contaminating event. When Wilson Mutual received this letter from the Falks, Wilson Mutual filed a declaratory judgment action asking the court whether and to what extent Wilson Mutual had a duty to defend and indemnify the claims arising out of the manure contamination. Shortly after the declaratory judgment action was filed, the DNR filed a claim against the Falks because the DNR supplied temporary water to the Falks' neighbors when this happened. The DNR also gave well grants to some of the Falks' neighbors so they could redrill their wells. 5 of the Falks' neighbors had to redrill their wells. And the DNR filed a declaratory judgment action. Immediately, Wilson Mutual retained merits counsel for the Falks and stayed the liability portion of the case. This court 2 years ago in the Hirshhorn case held that bat guano, manure, and feces is unambiguously waste, an irritant, and a contaminant. As Mr. Evans noted in the prior case, cow manure has the exact same characteristics as bat guano. It makes impure or unclean its surroundings. Here specifically, it made the water impure or unclean. It's an irritant. It irritates the body. I supplied the court in my appendix a number of studies from the EPA, the DNR, the UW, showing that manure contains harmful parasites, pathogens. If you consume manure, you're going to get very sick, and you're probably going to end up in the hospital. So again, it's an irritant. It irritates the body. Also, manure is waste. The common and ordinary definition of the term feces is waste matter eliminated from the bowels.
So one of the incongruities that I observe in your analogy, which you articulated in your briefs and you started your presentation with it, was with the two petroleum products, the gasoline and oil. And you're saying, well, an oil company would view refined oil as liquid gold, which it is. But can any of us imagine any set of circumstances where a reasonable person would invite, much less pay someone, to spray their property or to inject their property or to place onto their property without being properly contained gasoline or oil?
No question they wouldn't.
And so doesn't the question go similarly to the previous case, which you made a short presentation in? Doesn't it go to the whole idea that the poison wouldn't be in the dose here, but the poison would be in it in the application? I mean, you have to acknowledge that cow manure has been used as a fertilizer by farmers for a long time.
Right.
And so far, we don't have farmers, as far as I know, keeling over left and right because of manure being on their property. So once it gets into the water supply, doesn't that change a characteristic of it? So that it converts it from a useful agricultural tool to a pollutant.
There's no question. The reason I use the gas and oil analogy is because gas and oil are useful if they're in the right place. If they're in the wrong place, they're a pollutant. The right place would be the gas tank in your car. The wrong place is Lake Michigan. So it is all about context. And here, the Court of Appeals failed to acknowledge the context. They stopped at, it's a valuable fertilizer that was intentionally applied on the field. They stopped. They shouldn't have stopped. They should have asked the question, where did it actually end up here? What was the effect of that? The DNR got involved. The little child got sick. Wells had to be re-drilled.
If we're instructed by our prior case law to interpret the language of a contract as it would be by a reasonable insured, isn't that a prospective view? In other words, at the time of signing, what do the parties contemplate? It seems to me that viewing it prospectively, everyone would anticipate that a dairy farmer would make use of the manure generated by the cattle as fertilizer. It's only looking back after things have gone awry, to use a word that's that the insured can see that, boy, this went terribly wrong. This thing that I commonly use and commonly spread has been misplaced. So isn't it the proper perspective that we should be looking prospectively at the time the contract was entered into, as opposed to back? Now, of course, it's obvious that the manure wound up being a problem. But how could anybody have expected that at the time the contract was signed?
But I think, you know, two parts to the answer. Number one, Mr. Falk knows that what he's dealing with contains harmful pathogens, bacteria, and that he must be very careful about spreading this stuff. There's a whole list of regulations on this from the federal government on down to Washington County. So he knows. He may see it as a beneficial fertilizer, but he also knows, hey, I can't spread this stuff to the point it gets in the water, or I'm going to be in big trouble with the DNR, and I might hurt some people. The other part of that is we look at all of these pollution cases kind of backwards because, as this court noted in Peace, the lead paint was an inchoate contaminant until it flaked off the wall. If it's on the wall, it's fine. If it's off the wall, it's now a pollutant contaminant irritant. You look at the Ace Baking case. Their fabric softener, a product I used yesterday, was determined to be a...
Not in the ice cream, though.
Not in the ice cream. But they looked at that and said, yeah, fabric softener is a beneficial substance. It's used by a lot of people, but it contaminated these ice cream cones. And again, I think that's where the Court of Appeals went wrong. I mean, they began their case, they began their decision touting the virtues of liquid gold, this great septage. Beneficial substances can be pollutants, too. It's all about context. But the context here is the manure ended up in the water, causing financial harm, and caused harm to a small child. And that can't be lost.
You've answered my question.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Graff, why doesn't the endorsement here result in coverage?
For a number of reasons, Justice Crooks. Number one, it's the Farm Chemicals Limited Liability Endorsement. It applies to, by its very title, farm chemicals. And what the folks have argued in opposition to the pollution exclusion applying here is that manure is not a farm chemical. It's not like the rest of the things in this list of pollutants. But when it comes to this endorsement, oh, yeah, it's a farm chemical, but it's not. There's a number of exclusions in the endorsement, and the first exclusion is it doesn't apply to pollutants, and if manure is a pollutant, the endorsement doesn't apply. Now, the argument from the folks is that the exclusion only applies to government requests for cleanup, kind of the CERCLA actions, but that's not in the policy. There's no language like that in the policy. There's another exclusion for farming practices that violate the law. The DNR, in their claim against the folks in this case, have alleged they violated chapters 281 and 283 of the Wisconsin statutes. And also, the endorsement only applies to physical injury. So it would not apply to the bodily injury for Atticus Yante, and it specifically doesn't apply to loss of use. That's what happened here, loss of use of the wells and bodily injury. The endorsement doesn't apply to that. It only applies to physical injury. Off the top of my head, if you spread a farm chemical and you damage a car, that would be physical injury. But the endorsement, again, specifically says it's not going to apply to loss of use.
Why isn't a well that's destroyed and can't be used anymore physically injured?
Wilson Mutual's view is that the well is not physically destroyed. It can't be used. It's a loss of use. I mean,
well, but a well is only a well to get water out of it. If you destroy it, you can call it what you like, but you still don't have a well anymore.
Right. And again, if you, physical injury, again, I view that as something's damaged in the car or a piece of the well is broken off.
I can see what you're saying is a physical injury. I don't quite understand your argument about why a well that's, you know, not a well anymore because you can't drink any water out of it isn't a physical injury to the well. I mean, you still got water there. Would you have to dry the well up? It would have to be dry or something, like do some of this. Sometimes they do fracking in areas, and when they are doing that, the explosions will cause all the water to fall out of somebody's aquifer so the wells dry up. Is that the only way you could have a physical injury to a well?
But, and I'm not exactly sure on this, but I think at least some of the folks' neighbors simply drill deeper.
Well, they had to drill a new well, though. You wouldn't drill on top of the one that was contaminated with E. coli.
And again, I view that as the well's still there. It's still in pristine condition. You just can't use it. It's loss of use.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, there's physical injury to the water. Physical injury to the water. That's like your car.
Again, I would view that as the water's there. It just can't be used, so it's loss of use.
Well, the car's still there, but you can't use it because the engine is gone.
And, yeah. Again, I view the issue as loss of use.
The usual well damage case is that the innards of the well have been shaken up by the dynamite or somehow put out of function, so you it won't pump the water. The water might be good, but the well won't pump.
Right.
That's the usual well damage case.
Right. And in this particular case, the water's there, the well's there. The water just can't be used because it contains...
The well's working fine.
Well's working fine, except can't use the water because it's contaminated, which, again, is why the DNR had to bring in a temporary water supply. This court in Peace found that lead paint was a pollutant based on two ideas. Number one, your common average person is going to understand the dangers of lead paint. And I think your common average person is also going to understand the dangers of having manure, any sort of feces, in water. I mean, as I was preparing for this case, there are more and more articles in the newspaper about this. This is starting to become part of the conscience of the people in this state. They understand that this land spreading of manure can cause significant damage to water. The other thing...
Council, though, I remember in 1990, I remember explicitly when I first found out about non-point source pollution. And before that, I was ignorant about the issues related to manure runoff in our lakes and streams. So you say you're reading articles now and people are becoming aware of it. Is the awareness of the problem part of the legal analysis?
I don't think so. Maybe I overstated it. I think intuitively all of us understand that if you take a glass of pristine, fresh water and put a little manure in it, that's a bad thing.
Sure, but I don't think necessarily everyone understands that there is runoff. If you drop some manure in a glass of water... That's pretty a firm grasp of the obvious, you know. But the leaching and the runoff causing any problems, I'm not sure that's so well known.
Well, I know Wisconsin, the other part of the Peace analysis was, from your concurrence, is a heavily regulated substance being lead paint. Land spreading manure is heavily regulated, again, from the feds on down to Washington County, where Mr. Falk lives. And the primary purpose of those regulations is the primary purpose of those regulations is to keep this stuff out of the water.
There are so many ways one can approach an opinion, and you've got to figure out what's the truest way, the best way, the most supported by law. One way that this opinion could be approached is the language ambiguous? Well, all you have to do is look at the Secura policy. It has fertilizer in. That's really clear. And you look at the other policies, and we are now discussing a number of issues. Is it from the perspective of the insured, the reasonable person? It's objective, but how narrow do you get? When do you define... You know, when does the ordinary and daily use go awry? And, you know, we have a number of these issues. One real simple way of approaching it is just as I said. If you want fertilizer excluded, say it. How do you respond to that?
Well, as this court noted in Hirshhorn, broad doesn't mean ambiguous. And this court in Hirshhorn found that back guano was a pollutant, even though back guano wasn't specifically listed as a pollutant. In Peace, this court found lead paint was a pollutant, even though it wasn't specifically listed. In Ace Baking, fabric softener is not listed. You know, these insurance companies choose to use these broad terms, and I think Attorney Rice addressed this during the Chrysler case. If you would have to list every single potential substance that could be a pollutant, your insurance policy is going to go from 100 pages to 1,000 pages. And new substances are created all the time. So, okay, now you're going to get another 5 pages from your insurance company. It's really going to be a mess, and I don't think it's going to help out the insureds because now they have to look through 1,000 pages of substances and to determine whether that substance is a pollutant. Again, this court has endorsed the approach that broad doesn't necessarily mean ambiguous, and that's why you use the common and ordinary understanding of the terms, which is what this court did in Hirshhorn when they said, unambiguously, back guano was a contaminant, irritant, and waste. And again, the appellants here have not meaningfully distinguished bat guano from the manure here in terms of strictly looking at the policy and the definitions and the common and ordinary understanding of those terms.
So if this court and all of its learned expertise can distinguish bat guano from manure, we can answer this case easily?
My submission is that you can't distinguish bat guano from manure. That's my position.
Well, how do you distinguish the Court of Appeals in this case and in the case we heard? One case, human manure is a pollutant, and the policies tended to look very much alike as to what defining pollutant and defining and stating discharge, et cetera. And in this case, you got cow manure, and they say, hey, liquid gold. How do you distinguish the two? And how do we draw, the court draw an opinion that combines the two or gets a definition or gets a standard that will cover the two manure cases? It might not cover different manure guano, but the two manure cases. What do you do with them?
I think the issues are the same. I think the Preisler court got it right. They looked at the common and ordinary definition of the terms, and they said, of course, septic, feces, any kind of feces, is unambiguously an irritant and a contaminant and waste when it contaminates or pollutes water. The court in the Falk case, in this case, they acknowledge that looking at the policy language, one might conclude that manure is a contaminant and an irritant, but then focus solely on the fact that this is a beneficial substance. Farmers like it. Again, they used a subjective standard. They didn't just look at the language and the policies and use an objective standard. So I think that's where you get the difference of opinion between the two courts of appeals. But again, my position would be Preisler got it right because they looked at the policy language, whereas Falk looked at the subjective valuation of the insured, as I've called it, my term, not anybody else's.
Counselor, the problem here was bacteria, apparently, that got into the well. And this case certainly is similar to the earlier one in that both of the farmers who either approved or spread the fertilizer thought that they were doing something to enrich the land to grow crops on, correct? Why is the policy, or let me put it the other way around, in your view, is the policy clear that one must define what is a pollutant both at the time the material is applied for the benefit of the land and the time at which it ends up, or actually it wasn't the manure, it was the bacteria, but a product of the application of the manure ends up in the water system? Is the definition clearly the same in both places in your policy?
No, it's not, but practically speaking, you don't have a problem if substances are in the right place.
Well, I was talking about the definition, though, and I think you have a problem if the definition isn't clear in both places, to be quite honest with
you. Yeah, I mean, the definition says we don't cover damage by pollutants, and the American states case, the insured tried to get into some sort of metaphysical argument. Was it the negligence? Was it the contaminant? And basically there the court said, if the damage arises from a pollutant, then it's excluded by the absolute pollution exclusion. So I think the case law somewhat handles that issue.
Well, maybe I'm just viewing it a little bit differently than that. I mean, my concern was, what would a reasonable person in the position of the insured view spreading manure on his land as applying a pollutant? Now, he certainly would view putting E. coli in his well as putting a pollutant in his well. So certainly he would never do that. But my question to you is, why, when someone is applying fertilizer to their land for the benefit of the land, why does a reasonable insured think that he's applying a pollutant?
because a reasonable insured understands that significant damage and liability can come if that's pollutant, that manure gets into the water, which is why you have all these regulations. They see it as a beneficial product. There's no question about that. And again, that's, I'm getting back to the oil example. Oil companies love oil. That's how they make their money. It's liquid gold to them. But they understand, even though they're dealing with it, if a tanker crashes in Lake Michigan and spills oil on the lake floor, that's a pollutant, even though, again, they view the substance as very beneficial.
But when the tanker crashes, it wasn't trying to do something beneficial. I mean, to me, that's like the question I asked the last folks about, is there a difference in the definition of pollutant depending on whether you're looking at the farmer applying the material or the tank leaking? Because the leaking tank is never doing anything beneficial. To me, the leaking tank is more like your example of the crash.
And I'm going to answer your question. My time is up. Again, I don't think whether they're doing something beneficial or not enters into the equation.
Okay, well, that's what I wondered. Thank you. That does answer my question. That's okay.
Both cases you have water contamination, don't you?
Right.
And the water contamination causes damage.
Right. And specifically in our case, DNR had to supply temporary water, wells had to be redrilled, and a child was sick.
Right. So, in your both cases, and you were involved in the other case.
Very briefly. Sorry.
That's good, right?
Yeah, that's right. I heard exactly what I wanted to hear.
Right, I understand that. But in both cases, do you have nitrites as a result of the manure?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole reason that the feces is spread on the field, so that the nitrates work in. But one of the things I want to do...
And E. coli shouldn't be there?
Well, certainly you shouldn't turn on your faucet and have, stinky brown water.
But I understand, too. But in there was an allegation in the complaint, and Hastings, I know you don't represent, had an issue about E. coli and there was emphasis that it was the nitrites, if I got it right, not anything else. But there is E. coli as a problem.
And I think it's not so much.
Right?
There hasn't been so much an issue or an argument in this case, but in the Preisler case, the trial court had to deal with that. And I think the trial court, my memory may be failing me, I think the trial court relied on that American States decision, which said, you know, it's not some metaphysical idea, or was it the negligence, was it the pollutant? The pollutant was spread on the farm field, and somehow it caused damage, and that's enough. So that's kind of how the trial court addressed that issue.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Hetzel, Attorney Hetzel, representing the Jontes et al.
May it please the court. My name is Ryan Hetzel from the law firm of Hetzel and Nelson in West Bend. I represent the Jonte family, the Wiedmeyer family, the Lorge family, all of whom had their wells rendered unusable due to the presence of high levels of nitrate and E. coli. They did not qualify for a DNR grant, so their wells remain unusable. I also am the guardian ad litem for the Jonte's minor child who suffered a bacteria avium infection.
Who was harmed? The wells, the water?
What's that? I'm sorry?
Where was the harm? Was it to the wells? Was it to the water?
Both.
Does it matter?
I don't think that it does.
Okay.
This case is...
Why not? Go ahead.
This case is postured significantly different than the first case. This is a declaratory judgment action that was brought by the insurance company. There was no discovery, essentially. This was briefed on summary judgment. So we have very, very limited facts in this case. And I noticed counsel suggested that there was some type of violation in the spreading here, but I don't think his argument rests upon that. I think had the folks spread exactly according to their management plan, they would still be here saying that this is pollution if it got into the water. This case is all about language and insurance policies and the expectations of the reasonable insured. It's boilerplate stuff. It really is. And you can follow Donaldson, and you can follow Peace, and you can follow Hirshhorn, and arrive at the conclusion that the Court of Appeals did. In fact, you should. You must. The absolute pollution exclusion, which is new, that's since the mid to late 90s, and that's why we don't have, I believe, a lot of case law on this, was the insurance industry's response to the expected or intended language they used to have. They started covering a lot of chemical spills, and they came up with this absolute pollution exclusion. Now, they themselves worded it very, very broadly. A solid, liquid, or gas, that pretty much covers everything. It's the beginning of the pollution exclusion, and it's dispersed or discharged into the air, land, or water. They just missed fire. But it is an extremely broad exclusion. As pipe fitters noted, there has to be some limitation on this, or essentially there's no coverage. This exclusion could be used to exclude anything. And in this particular case, there's no dispute that the underlying policy provided coverage. There is an occurrence.
Provided coverage for what?
For bodily injury and property damage. The insurance company is now saying we're going to rely on this exclusion in this policy, the pollution exclusion, to void that coverage. So the policy itself provides coverage initially, but we're going to exclude under the pollution exclusion. In this particular case, the folks purchased a policy from Wilson Mutual, which on the deck page is listed as a farm owner's policy. The liability portion of the policy is entitled Personal General Liability Farm. That's absolutely critical.
Covers liability of the farmer.
They knew their audience. And as we know, as the drafter of the insurance policy, they have a responsibility to use appropriate language. They cannot rely upon general terms and ambiguities. This court has to construe insurance policies against them if they are ambiguous. And in this case, they're relying on the word waste in the pollution exclusion. And they're saying cow manure is waste.
Oh, when the, in oral argument, though, they don't limit it to waste. They usually use three terms, contaminant, and then something else. Irritant, and waste. So here they're relying on all three terms, not just waste.
Yeah, the pollution exclusion is a little more broad. What it says is a pollutant, as defined in the policy, means any solid, liquid, gaseous, thermal, or radioactive irritant or contaminant. So that applies, I believe, to all of those things, including acids, alkalis, chemicals, fumes, smoke, soot, vapor, and waste. And this policy specifically says waste includes materials to be recycled, reclaimed, reconditioned, as well as disposed of. Waste was the term that the trial court used,
mm-hmm.
and what was argued in this case, that this is waste, and it meant excrement. This is cow waste. So that's what the trial court hitched its wagon to. And, of course, looking at the bat guano case, well, that's excrement, too. But there is a significant difference between the two, and there is a distinction. And I know that this court understands that. A homeowner looking at bat guano would say, that's a bad thing. I don't want bat guano in my home. A landlord would look at lead paint chips and say, that's a bad thing. I don't want lead paint chips in my rental property. A farmer would look at cow manure and say, that's a good thing. That's going to fertilize my crops next year.
What's your response, counsel, to your opposing counsel's argument in regard to Ace Baking, fabric softener being an acceptable product, but misplaced, it becomes a pollutant?
Absolutely. In the context of that particular situation where you have a company that is making ice cream cones, fabric softener is not a good thing anywhere near your food product.
Something you have to help me get by is I hear you saying that you want us to look at it from the perspective of a farmer, because this was a policy issued to a farmer and farmers need to use or like to use or often use manure. Are farmers also regulated by the EPA, the DNR, the Washington County Land and Conservation District? And in those regulations and those requirements, are farmers in a position to know that those entities define manure as a pollutant?
They are regulated. The folks had a spreading plan that was established by the DNR that they had to spread according to. So it is regulated, absolutely. I don't know that that defines this issue of what their expectations were under this insurance policy, though.
I need you to help me with this, because a farmer may be in a unique position to know using manure in the wrong way, if it ends up in the water, that's going to be trouble, and you're going to be subject to sanctions. So help me out with that.
I agree that a farmer who would intentionally use manure in the wrong way would know that they're in trouble, but that's not what we have here.
They don't have to have groundwater testing annually or anything like that?
They have to. They should spread according to their plan. And there's no evidence in this record at all that they didn't spread according to their plan.
So there's no testing or... I haven't looked at those. I can take a look at them and see if in there they define pollutants.
In this particular case, we have a high-level aquifer and a low point near the field. And this is not in the record of this case, unfortunately.
Then don't.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks.
You know, I have to go back to the ace baking, and that's part of what Justice Eagler's basis of her question was. You, in response to my question, you said, well, fabric softener belongs nowhere near ice cream. Well, I guess one question that comes to mind, or one observation that comes to mind, is, well, that depends. Are both properly packaged? Are both following, as you alluded to, regulations, albeit in a different context? Couldn't your opposing counsel equally say, well, cow manure belongs nowhere near my drinking water? And so I'm not sure that I am completely satisfied. Maybe that's the best answer there is. I can't think of a better one. But I wanted to at least call to your attention to say, I'm not sure that that really answered it.
Cow manure is spread on farm fields, and I'm not a farmer, so my limited understanding of the science is that as the cow manure hits the ground absorbs the chemical ingredients, the nitrates, they go into the plants, they're helpful and beneficial. Under normal circumstances, by the time that material hits the water, it's been absorbed enough by the ground that we don't have this issue of high level of nitrates. So this is where we talk about everyday occurrences gone slightly awry. Anybody that's driven on Wisconsin highways during planting season has smelled Wisconsin's derriere. This is an everyday occurrence for some farms. And not every drinking, you know, well is contaminated every time that that happens. It's a very rare occurrence and has to have a set of unusual factors for that to occur. And the problem here with the insurance company's argument is what they're saying is, we'll provide coverage for your manure spreader. We'll provide coverage for all the implements that are involved in this. And quite frankly, we don't have any problem with you using cow manure. We have a problem when the cow manure causes damage. Well, that's exactly why you get insurance, isn't it? For an unintentional consequence. The folks here spread manure on their farm field. What did they do wrong? The fact that it unintended got into a well, the insurance company is saying that's pollution, we're out of it. And that's not correct. They chose to rely on the term waste, knowing full well they were writing a farm policy. If they did not want to cover cow manure or fertilizer in the farm policy, they should have put it in there. We've heard other policies that have put it in there. Rural Mutual, who was here a little earlier, actually has a policy that uses this language. Waste includes, but is not limited to, animal waste, manure, urine, or general remains after death. If you want to exclude that in a farm policy, then you should say it, because the folks had no notice.
Counsel, I referenced earlier my personal experience, of finding out about non-point source pollution, that is the runoff of manure in the nitrates and polluting water in the early 1990s. I can't remember when, but probably around that time, the county in which I live, Marathon County, has an ordinance. I don't know this to be true. We can take judicial notice if it's an ordinance, but I imagine all counties have ordinances that govern non-point source pollution. Marathon County, I remember, it's Chapter 11 of their ordinance, and it's adopted pursuant to state regulations, which are promulgated in response to state statutes. So with that, why shouldn't every farmer know that manure runoff is subject to non-point source pollution?
I don't know that every farmer shouldn't know that. I suspect many of them and most of them do.
Mm-hmm.
But tying that into this case, when they read their policy and they say pollution, a pollution exclusion, do they think their cow manure that they're going to spread on their fields will void their coverage when they spread the cow manure on the field? I don't think most farmers would think that's the case. Even if they know, there may be consequences down the road.
I think the extension offices and counties throughout the state were very active in that.
Very much so. I know Washington County became involved in this right away as soon as they found out the wells were testing positive for high nitrates and E. coli. And then the DNR response followed shortly thereafter.
How do you, do you think the two cases we're hearing today are consistent in defining pollutant under insurance policies that are essentially the same?
I know that the Court of Appeals and Chrysler distinguished between human waste and cow manure.
And they have a footnote that talks about this case.
Correct. I know they made that distinction. And I know that that's important in this case because the folks were farmers and Wilson Mutual knew who they were writing to. And as the drafters of this document, they were in the best position to clarify what the language should have been.
So you think they're consistent?
The decisions certainly aren't consistent, but
right.
I understand the distinction.
Well, explain it to me, please.
What the Court of Appeals was saying in this case is that a farmer would not understand at the time they purchased their policy that cow manure could subsequently void their policy as pollution after they applied it. And I think what the Court of Appeals in the other case was saying is that somebody who's in the human septic or waste disposal may have a different understanding of what pollution is in terms of having that spread on a farm field.
So the flower farm, and they're spreading malarganite, right?
Sure.
So then the legal theme is you look to the business of the person buying the policy, because the farmer buys the policy and doesn't understand that it'll exclude when manure is spread, cow manure is spread. The septic tank company buying the policy understands that they are dealing with a serious toxic problem and there might be liability. So the legal principle you get from the cases, I ask you, what I hear is that it's the reasonable insured, and you have to look at not only as an individual, but what kind of business is he running or it running, and what does it think it wants to be buying?
In this case, when Wilson Mutual is writing a policy called a farm owner's policy, mm-hmm. I think that they can reasonably expect that the insured on the other end will be a farmer.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that. So that anything the farmer does should be covered by the liability policy?
Oh, absolutely not, but they have to know their audience. And if they're going to exclude something that's an everyday farming activity, they need to put that language in there that says, we're not going to cover this.
Okay. And then as to the septic tank, you apply that same rule?
If they're writing something to the a septic, if they know it's a septic company, and they're going to exclude it, if they have knowledge that they're going to be spreading this on a field, then I think that they should put septage on there. I don't know what that level of understanding was between the insurance company and the septic business. I don't know.
That isn't part of the there's no evidence about that. It's the general concept.
In answering the court's question, I do believe that an insurance company who writes a specific lines policy like this has an obligation to write it towards the insurers who they know are going to be purchasing it.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, should you prevail, then what happens in this case? Does it go back? Is there
it gets remanded to the court for a declaration of coverage, and my understanding would be then Wilson Mutual would be buying these people some wells and reimbursing the DNR.
Well, do you have to show negligence? Any other issues that have to be proven in the case? I want to know if there's a need for a trial here, if you should prevail.
I believe what happens is it gets reversed because this is a declaratory judgment
right,
action.
I understand that.
The court declares that, and then the complaints are going to have to be adjusted or amended to allege, yes, negligence and coverage, and then the case will proceed accordingly. Yes, I do believe that's the second step.
Okay. Is there coverage for intentional acts?
No, there is no coverage for intentional act, although that is not being alleged. It's
the accidental contaminant or waste or whatever.
Correct. There's no question the folks were not trying to contaminate the wells.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Ronald, Attorney Ronald Ragatz, on representing the Fox.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Ron Ragatz. I'm a member of DeWitt Ross and Stevens SC. I am representing Robert and Jane Falk in this litigation, who are also here present in the courtroom personally today. Mr. and Mrs. Falk are small business owners. They are farmers. They are family farmers. They own and operate a farm in Washington County. The court has heard in both this case and the case before it a lot about the absolute pollution exclusion. I want to do a few things here today. I want to give you my take on the legal analysis. I want to explain in particular why it should not apply in this case, regardless of whether it applies in the septage case. I want to talk a bit about the endorsement and also yet another coverage that the Falks had in place that was subsequently acknowledged at the time they were sued by Wilson Mutual, claiming there was no coverage.
And the Falks are the insured under the Wilson policy.
The Falks are insured under the Wilson Mutual policy.
And they want coverage.
And they want coverage.
Because otherwise they're going to be personally they might be personally liable.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So
you might be.
Let me start with just a couple of minutes on my take on where Wisconsin precedent is on application of the pollution exclusion. One, it's not always ambiguous. Two, it's not always unambiguous. Three, the goal here is to determine, to construe the policy as it would be understood by a reasonable insured in the position, in this case, of the Falks. And I want to divert for just a second to say what I believe the legal standard is not, or how you arrive at the answer. As the insurers have said, we disagree. The answer is not that you look to the end result and say, my goodness, we had a bad end result here. This must be pollution. Because if you look at Donaldson and the carbon dioxide It made the people sick. They had nausea. They had extreme fatigue, headaches, nasal problems, eye irritation, upset stomachs. There is no way that you could look at that end result and not say, well, the carbon dioxide in that context was an irritant. That's the end result. The court didn't focus on the end result. It focused on, is this an everyday activity gone awry? And is this a substance that is in its ordinary daily capacity or context is not harmful? So, and we look at the other case, the Langoni case by the Court of Appeals, that involved carbon monoxide. And my goodness, one of the tenants died. You cannot look at that case and the end result and say that wasn't an irritant or, for that matter, a contaminant. But again, that's not the way the court analyzed it. It analyzed it according to Donaldson, an ordinary daily activity, a routine activity that has somehow gone awry. Now, I want to apply that to this case. The context, when we talk about, I think we've all agreed here that context is important. There are several elements to that. What's the substance? What's the venue or the location? Who's the insured? And how did it happen that this substance allegedly ended up causing harm? Bear in mind, nothing has been proven against my clients. We're at the level of allegations. I'm somewhat surprised that our insurer has not recognized that in their presentation. But if we go back and look at that, first thing is we're dealing with manure. And we have a statement by Wilson Mutual, well, that's always harmful. No matter where it is, it makes its surroundings impure. That's clearly not true. It is from common experience, from the internet materials that we provided, from case law, manure is an excellent fertilizer. It is a very good nutrient. It is much better than synthetic fertilizer, better for the environment, more ecologically sound. It's something that has been used forever by dairy farmers. And in this case, through those articles, we were able to give you some rough approximation of what it means to the Falks in terms of financially. To replace that fertilizer with synthetic fertilizer would cost tens of thousands of dollars. I think I calculated it, according to the Ohio State article, at $27,000 or something like that per year. That's why you could tell this right from the policy, because Wilson Mutual knew it, they have all sorts of equipment worth tens of thousands of dollars to handle and spread that manure. That's not how someone deals with waste. That's the characteristics of an asset. And you see it referred to again and again in the literature, manure, to a dairy farmer as an asset, not manure. If this is cow manure in the walls of a home, or if the person who came to your party had brought cow manure to it,
which no one did,
we would be looking at this, we would have a different frame of reference. But Wilson Mutual knew what this farmer did. They insured 600 head of cattle. They had 1,670 acres of land. They had manure spreading equipment. It's not a big leap to know what was going to go on.
You know, we've had other cases where you have a business or an activity and the policy then doesn't cover it. And the lawsuits there generally are for bad faith or that the insurance agent failed to tell the company what it was, and they are therefore liable for selling the right policy. And your arguments range between that kind of concept and how you define pollutant, and you put it together and you say, hey, they knew this was a farm. They knew that there was going to be cow manure, and that the policy, therefore, cannot have an exclusion by definition because it's not the policy that the parties wanted.
Well,
you see what I'm trying to say?
I see what you're saying. I think, first of all, that there are overtones of what you say, but clearly, excuse me, this is a case where we are saying this policy does cover it.
By the very definition of pollutant, regardless of the business.
In this case, I think it is particularly with respect to what this, in the context of this policy, a dairy farmer, this operation, this equipment, they had to have known. You read this policy as a whole, they had to have known.
You read pollutant in context.
Yes.
Not a reasonable person reading this definition without a fact situation of what it is.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that's where precedent tells us we must be. I have to touch on a few points because I know my time is limited. My yellow light's not on yet. One is the Falks had a nutrient management plan. A few important points about that. Well, number one, it's professionally done, prepared by a certified crop agronomist. Two, it is approved by the government, the Washington County Land and Water
Conservation
District. Number three, it is not something that they were required to do because they are not a CAFO. They are not a factory farm. The law did not require them to do that. They did it as good stewards of the land. That's a family farm, and that's important to the Falks as well as to their neighbors. And the most important thing of all, it is undisputed that they followed their nutrient management plan. This is not a situation of handling the nutrients irresponsibly, mismanaged, improperly. It is undisputed on this record. The DNR in its record recognized that they had such a plan, that they followed it. There was no, by the way, when the DNR went out, they saw no evidence of runoff. So this is a case where if it is proven that the Falks have liability, then it will be a different circumstance than in many of the other cases.
But you're arguing they don't, that there's that Wilson has liability under this. That is their coverage. We're not up to whether the Falks have liability, are we?
The Falks do. You're correct. You're correct.
And if this is not a pollutant, so we get to the next stage, then the issue is whether the Falks, an issue might be whether the Falks were negligent, right? If they were not negligent, then would they be liable under the policy? Would the policy be liable? Would they be liable?
I would presume that they would not have liability if found not negligent, but Wilson Mutual has an obligation to defend them.
Right.
And Wilson Mutual, and what we would ask is that this be remanded with instructions that the declaration be entered, duty to defend, obligation to indemnify. I want to touch briefly on the endorsement. There were several factors that were raised by Wilson Mutual. One was that this is not farm chemicals. The insuring agreement does not require that it be a farm chemical in order for it to apply. And the insuring agreement is what governs. It can be a liquid, a gas, or a chemical. But liquid, as long as it is used in the ordinary course, is covered. Second thing, violation of the law. There is such an exclusion. It's never been proven. Wilson Mutual did nothing to prove it. It's their obligation to prove exclusions. That doesn't exclude coverage. Number three is physical damage to property or property damage. We cited three Wisconsin Court of Appeals cases plus a Western District of Wisconsin case that groundwater contamination is damage to tangible property. All of this arises from that tangible damage to property. There's a clause in there which I think on a plain reading would clearly tell you that what they're trying to exclude is the cost of complying with a cleanup order or an injunction. Kind of harkens back to when we had a distinction in the City of Edgerton case and subsequent between a claim for damages and a claim for injunctive relief. It's all settled in Johnson Controls. This provision is at that. They don't want to cover the injunctive relief, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about restitutionary relief. There's a third coverage, which is the damage to property of others. It does include a defense obligation. That's clear from the provision, because it says that the policy, that coverage doesn't increase the coverage except that, and it refers to the defense obligation. It is limited, but I believe it is also something that applies to each of the claimants, so there's more than one occurrence. I also want to address...
And what's the occurrence here?
The occurrence in this case is an occurrence, is an accident that leads, that results in damage that's unexpected and unintended from the standpoint of the insured. Obviously, the causative event, allegedly, is the land spreading. The unexpected damage occurs when the groundwater is impacted. So, what exactly is the occurrence depends on whether we're talking about trigger or we're talking about the definition of occurrence. I'm taking you probably farther than you want to go.
No, because questions have been raised about that as to what exactly is the point, and it could be raised, as I just did with you, the definition of occurrence in the policy, or it could be raised, as Justice Bradley raised it, as to what's the contaminant, the leach into the water, or is the contaminant the manure itself, if I understood the spreading of the manure. Depends on how you look at it, but to me, they're both the same question. They may not be to Justice Bradley.
How I would approach that, Your Honor,
yeah,
is to hearken back to Donaldson for what we are trying to do here today. If at the outset it is an everyday routine substance that in that everyday routine context is generally harmless, and in this case beneficial, but somehow went slightly awry, and if it did go awry in this case, we know that that would be slightly and unexpectedly because they had a nutrient management plan they were complying with. That is where the focus is. It's the same in Langoni, and I think that the Court of Appeals, in our case, nailed it in terms of the analysis under the existing precedent.
Counselor, if you agree, and if you don't tell me, that when the bacteria got into the water as a result of the spreading, that result was a pollutant. Is that right?
When
the bacteria got into the water, was that a pollutant?
There is E. coli in the water, I think one would consider that to be contamination or pollutant.
Okay. Well, if it is, and if an occurrence occurs when the groundwater is damaged and you need an occurrence to have coverage, how do you get coverage under the policy if your only occurrence occurs when something is a pollutant?
I think the occurrence occurs... Going back, hearkening to the definition of an occurrence,
yep,
which is an accident that leads,
yep,
to damages unexpected and unintended from the standpoint of the insured.
Right.
Certainly that process was set in motion, if in fact there is liability, when the spreading occurred, and that is the focus of Donaldson, and that's the focus of Langoni.
Right, and I have been looking at pollutant as perhaps being defined differently depending on the time at which you look at it. And from the farmer's perspective, when he spreads manure around, he's not thinking he's polluting his fields or anybody else as well. But then if you talk about the substances getting into the well, and that is a pollutant, and if the time an occurrence occurs is when that combination occurs, but you need an occurrence to come under the policy, how can you say it's a pollutant at the time of the occurrence and still end up with coverage? Because pollutants are excluded.
This is conceptually, in that aspect, indistinguishable from Donaldson.
Well, it may be. It may
and
be.
Langone.
I didn't write Donaldson, so I'm thinking about it again.
Well, Your Honor, I'm going at this analysis two ways. One is, where does precedent take us?
Yep.
And two is, what are the reasonable expectations of the insured?
I get all of that. My concern was your last answer, actually. It didn't occur to me until you said an occurrence is when the groundwater is damaged. So that's when it began to bother me. Well, if it is, and if at that point in time the substance is a pollutant, and if you put occurrence and pollutant together, I think you have coverage problems. Now, I may not – it's just a question that arose because of the argument. I wasn't thinking about it before. But I'll read Donaldson again.
Your argument is it was a pollutant when it was leaked.
My response was, if there's manure in drinking water, then that would be a contaminant, an irritant, or if there's E. coli, same as carbon monoxide at a lethal level.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Graff, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. I'd like to give my take on Donaldson and Langone. Donaldson and Langone, based on my reading, stand for the proposition that generally harmless, omnipresent substances are not going to be excluded by the pollution exclusion when they cause damage in a situation that your average reasonable person would not consider to be a polluting event. Justice Gableman, I'm going to go back to your example. There was carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide at that party. There was no manure. It's not universally present like carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. There's carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide in this room. No manure. The average manure is not generally harmless. Again, if you consume manure, you're going to be sick. You're probably going to get sick, and you may have to be hospitalized. The other thing is, when manure contaminates groundwater, an average person would take a look
at it. I'd be more friendly to your argument on that point if we had farmers running around the states eating manure, which last time I heard, we don't. They use it for fertilizer. And so I guess I'd like to afford you the opportunity to squarely rebut your opposing counsel's assertion that under Donaldson, this is a regular routine event or occurrence that went slightly awry.
Donaldson and Langone involve two substances, carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide, that are generally harmless except in extreme levels and omnipresent. Manure may be common on a farm. We'll concede that. But it's not omnipresent like carbon dioxide.
What about the other attorneys pointing out that the on top of the endorsement or the policy, it says policy for farm or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean,
family farm.
All right, I think that argument is pretty easy to refute. I mean, we issued a farm owner's policy. That doesn't mean we insure a farm owner for everything that they do. This court has issued many decisions that construction companies.
Yeah, but under Donaldson, you'd insure the farmer for the regular routine activities that go slightly awry.
But we didn't say that in our policy, and we specifically have an exclusion that says we exclude pollutant. And I took a look at this issue before coming here today, and our farm owner's policy covers a whole array of activities that you wouldn't find under a CGL policy, including semen coverage, extended coverage for farm machinery, hay coverage, milk contamination, horse liability, farm employee liability, and the list goes on and on. But because we...
They cover it or uncover it? I missed your first part.
They cover it.
Okay.
And again, you wouldn't find, for example, semen coverage in a standard CGL policy. But again, this idea that we issued a farm policy so we cover everything a farmer does No, that's why the policy has exclusions, and we exclude
certain
things.
You're changing it, though. That's not fair. You're changing it to everything the farmer does. Of course not. We can all imagine any sort of scenario that wouldn't be covered. But if he's engaging in a regular routine activity that farmers engage in, and that regular routine activity goes slightly awry, that's what I'm asking you to address. Don't build a field full of straw men and run around like a pyromaniac, as William F. Buckley Jr. said.
I think in Donaldson and Langone, it's specific to the substance. It's not just an average activity gone slightly awry. You look at the substance.
Okay, you're saying because in Donaldson and Langone, that it's a universal substance. There's
really
anywhere there are human beings, those substances are going to be there. But it's only because we're dealing with a regular routine activity on a farm, which does not occur. You don't have people off farms generally handling manure the same way. That's your distinction.
Right. And I think Donaldson and Langone, again, those courts said an average person wouldn't look at poisoning by carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide as a polluting event. You wouldn't say those people were polluted. Here you have manure going into the water. The DNR is involved. The water is inconsumable. The DNR had to supply temporary water supplies. I think an average person looking at that would say that's a polluting event. And, again, I think that's an important consideration when you're dealing with Donaldson and Langone.
Counsel, I was in the majority in the Peace case. One of the dissents, however, emphasized the consequence of the decision of the majority. And that consequence, perhaps, was that children who ingested lead paint would go without recovering any damages if there was no coverage under homeowners' policies for the multitude of landlords who owned homes that had been painted, let's say, before 1980-something.
Right.
That's a pretty huge consequence. What's the consequence of your, if you rule in your favor?
Two things. Number one, I think that was Justice Prosser's dissent, and I don't think...
No, that was Justice Crook's dissent. Prosser wrote
the majority opinion.
I joined the majority.
I should have not misspoke, but compensation for the victims I don't think should be a factor the court considers when looking at an insurance coverage issue.
No, but just like Justice Prosser asked when you were here on the other case, consequences, we want to put it in context. So consequences are not necessarily the driving analysis, but nor do we want to be blind to what our decision is. The driving analysis is the law, right? But we want to know what the consequence of our interpretation of the law is. So what's the consequence?
I think the consequence would be if you have a farmer or a septic trawler in the Chrysler case and they spread manure and contaminates a water supply causing damage, that's going to be excluded by the pollution exclusion. That doesn't mean, and there were multiple questions about this, that manure is always going to be excluded by the pollution exclusion. I can imagine situations where it wouldn't be. But again, when it contaminates water resulting in injury, it's all about context. You get back to context. It doesn't belong in the water. It contaminates that environment. So that would be the consequences. I hope that answered the question.
You answered it with your red light on. Thank you. So I want to thank you, Mr. Graff, Mr. Hitzel, and Mr. Ragatz, again, for a discussion in your briefs and an oral argument about the meaning of pollution in these insurance policies and an issue that the court has faced before and probably will have to face in other cases. And that ends our hearing in 2013 AP 691 and 776, Wilson Mutual Insurance Company versus Fork. The court is in recess until 1:30. No. The court is in recess until we next hear oral argument, which is next week. But the court will meet in a closed conference, and It'll be 2 o'clock for an hour and a half of lunch, which is a change on oral argument day.